Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 29 of the Playoff Push podcast. Thank you for joining us for another episode. And today I'm joined by a very special guest, 2021 Massachusetts Sportscaster of the Year, as well as the play-by-play announcer for the New England Patriots, Mr. Bob Sosi. How are we today?
We're good, Jack, and it's good to be with you. Thanks for having me. Glad to be on episode number 29. Appreciate
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I had met you at SBC camp, and, you know, you were super cool. I figured might as well email you and try to get you on the show.
Well, it's good to be here. Good to finally reconnect.
Oh, yeah. So, of course, you cover the New England Patriots. You have since 2013. One heck of a team in the news right now. Let's lead off with all the news itself. The hiring of... Well, most recently, we got Josh McDaniels coming back for, I believe, his third stint with New England as offensive coordinator. A six-time Super Bowl champ will look to develop Drake May, this time under Mike Vrabel. How are we feeling about that move as the new offensive coordinator heads into town?
Well, Josh obviously has had a rocky career as a head coach, to put it mildly, first in Denver, more recently in Las Vegas. And that's how I think a lot of the country knows him outside of New England. But here in New England, what we've seen is the development of a young coach who, over the course of time on the Patriots staff, has helped to develop some very good young quarterbacks, or at least put those young quarterbacks in position to become very good, setting them up for really the rest of their careers beyond the rookie season. I'm thinking of Jimmy Garoppolo in 2016, Jacoby Brissett as well for the Patriots, Garoppolo in 14, Brissett in 16, and Mac Jones in 2021. Before his career really fell off as a Patriot the following season when Josh departed to go to Las Vegas and become head coach of the Raiders. Obviously, his track record as a play caller, running the offenses that the Patriots have had through the years with Tom Brady at quarterback, a lot of people will look at those. And you know, we saw Josh McDaniels as a guy who seemed to have an answer for every situation, every counter that a defense posed against the Patriots during the first 6-7 years that I was calling the Pats games, when he was the coordinator and the Patriots were on their way to six consecutive AFC championships, reaching four Super Bowls and winning three, even in a game like Super Bowl 53 against the Los Angeles Rams, a game that was really an offensive stalemate for much of the way. McDaniels was able to dial up some tried and true plays from his playbook that really got that offense going on a key drive en route to the go-ahead touchdown. And so from my experience with Josh as a play caller, again, while Tom Brady, of course, it was the engine for that offense, McDaniels was certainly someone who knew how to coordinate with Brady that offense. And as I mentioned, the development of the young quarterbacks in particular during the time that I've been around the team, I think was really the biggest feather in his cap, if you pardon the cliche, this time around. He's local. Although he grew up in Northeast Ohio, he's been here for a long time, really cut his teeth as a young coach, really climbing the ranks, brought in after a stint at Michigan State as a graduate assistant by Bill Belichick, developed in the player personnel development and the coaching staff of the Patriots, rose up the ladder in the Patriots hierarchy, offensive staff, worked with Charlie Weiss, and then, of course, succeeded Weiss, was succeeded by Bill O'Brien, then came back to New England after his stints in Denver, briefly St. Louis as the offensive coordinator. She's got a long track record here. And while I think that, you know, a lot of ways it's a rerun of sorts, at the same time, I think the kind of offense that Mike Vrabel has expressed that he wants to run, an efficient passing offense, but still one that can run the ball both between the tackles with gap runs, but also be adept at the outside zone. And Josh McDaniels has proven that he can create an offense like that. Now, it's going to be a lot different from last year with the West Coast style of offense, perhaps, that the Patriots were running, shaped by Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan, and ultimately passed along to Alex Van Pelt, the Patriots offensive coordinator, and installed in Drake May's rookie season. But I think Josh has proven through the years that he can really adapt to the personnel, and he's been able in the past to implement a lot of outside zone, for example, in his offenses with the Patriots. When he's had a quarterback who could move, he was able to incorporate elements of mobility, design mobility for his young quarterbacks. I think about a game plan that he came up with in 2016, where at the last minute, Jacoby Brissett had to start on a Thursday against the Houston Texans as a rookie, 3 weeks into his NFL career, McDaniels crafted this offense that was really built largely around his legs. So he's been able to do it in a lot of different ways, do it for a long time here in New England. And I think it does make a lot of sense on a lot of levels because of his track record in particular with young quarterbacks. There will be a learning curve for Drake May, no doubt. But I think as Giants fans might have learned from the Hard Knocks episodes, that evaluation period, I mean, this is a young guy with a really tremendous aptitude. I think he'll be able to grasp the changes in terminology, the changes in the offense, going from what the Patriots ran last year to what McDaniels wants to install this year.
Yeah, McDaniels really has that great track record for developing those young quarterbacks. And Drake May, while the numbers might not be as, flashy as you might want it to be, he played very, very good football when you look at the actual games itself. The 15 to 10 touchdown interception ratio doesn't really do him like as good as he played. And a 3-9 record sure doesn't. He put up a very good season both through the air and on the ground. And of course, with McDaniel's tendency to develop quarterbacks, I think there's a huge opportunity for Drake May to maybe make a push to get this offense running and potentially make a playoff run even 2 years in the future.
Well, Jack, when you look at what was around Drake May last year, you had an offensive line that was really a revolving door.
Pretty lacking.
There's trying to audition to be in the NFL, frankly. They started the season with a left tackle who was signed in the offseason as a free agent who played right tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Chukwuma Okorafor. He lasted 12 snaps before he was benched in the season opener, and before long, he was gone, and that was really a sign of the troubled times to come for an offensive line that was constantly being recast throughout the season, with really only Mike Owenu as a fixture in the offensive line. But even he was shifting back and forth between tackle and guard for much of the season. They lost the starting center, David Andrews, and they wound up playing with a center, I think, on his fourth team in Ben Brown, who was signed off a practice squad on a Thursday and wound up starting that weekend on Sunday for the Patriots at that pivotal position on the offensive line. So there was very little push in the run game. There was no protection often in the passing game for the Patriots. And so May often had to use those legs almost out of self-preservation, but he still found ways to make plays. Then you look at the wide receiver group, and it was ranked going into the season as the worst group collectively by a lot of different national pundits and websites. And they lived up to that reputation or lived down to it, however you look at it, with two rookies who really disappointed in a big way, but also with a veteran like Kendrick Bourne, who a couple of years ago had a 50 catch plus season for the Patriots, and even he struggled to really get on the field and be consistent for them. Very little separation at wide receiver. They had a good tight end room. They had running backs in Ramondre Stevenson and Antonio Gibson, who I think underperformed in Stevenson's case this past season, had a lot of fumbling issues, really wasn't a
Yeah.
big factor in the passing game, and I think was underutilized in the case of Antonio Gibson when it came to the passing game. So there really wasn't a lot there for the Patriots offense outside of Drake May, and yet he was able to manufacture a lot of excitement, and frankly, he injected a lot of fun into the Patriots offense for a good portion of the season. They have to solidify the offensive line. It's going to take some time. It's going to be through the draft. It's going to be through free agency, perhaps through trades. They've got to find a receiver that can affect coverage and create a threat to opposing defenses. They had, I think, a fine this past year in secondary receiver Kayshon Booty, but he's not really a burner. He's not a guy who's going to take the top off a of defense, if you'll again pardon that term that gets tossed around a lot these days. But if you put the play in place some players who can protect Drake May. If you get, whether it's again through free agency or the draft, an established wide receiver or a young wide receiver with a huge upside, now the Patriots have a potential to be a much more prolific offense going forward, particularly, I think, with a coach like McDaniels, but also with a head coach like Vrabel. And speaking of Mike, whose teams in Tennessee had a track record of really not hurting themselves when they were at their best. And what we've seen over the course of the last couple of years is often the Patriots put themselves at really a disadvantage time and again, because at their worst, they were a team that was undisciplined. They had a lot of pre-snap penalties. They had a lot of issues getting lined up, receivers not knowing where to go. That won't be tolerated going forward. And I think that's one of the things that McDaniels will bring too, going back to your previous question, having watched Josh on the practice field during training camp. He will be very exacting and how he wants his receivers to run their routes and when the ball is supposed to come out and where the ball is supposed to go. Not that the other coaches who've been here in the recent past haven't had their own demands of players, but I think having watched McDaniels in the past, he will roll up his sleeves and his offenses will eventually either grasp it or those guys just won't see the field, the players, individuals who aren't able to catch up.
Yeah, that team last year really was lacking, and it really did screw Drake May over. But I think they're in a good situation now. A ton of cap space, a really good line of picks for this draft, and they just have a good opportunity with this new head coach in Vrabel and this new offensive coordinator in McDaniels to really get guys from free agency to want to come to New England, to want to start another dynasty. And one of the things you touched on I really agree with is the underutilization of Antonio Gibson. Throughout his career, he's really been seen as a receiving back, and this was easily his lowest amount of receptions he's gotten in a year. He had 23 this year. His next lowest was 36 his rookie year with Washington. He did, however, have 9 yards per reception, but I mean, just the lack of usage, I think, was so costly. His first downs were down, especially compared to 2022 and 2023. And of course, when you have a receiver room as, dare I say, negative as the Patriots do, you need to find a way to utilize your other positions to really gain that dominance in the passing attack, which I think they had an opportunity to do with Gibson, but didn't necessarily take.
I would agree with you, Jack. And those stats that you cited were very visible on my spotting charts that we create to call games. I noted that stat about his previous career low in reception several times down the stretch this season. And I really felt it was a factor, especially in the red zone, not utilizing the backs more. When you go back, and we're talking about Josh McDaniels' track record in New England, and before him, Charlie Weiss, and of course, between them, Bill O'Brien, the Patriots have always had, in those offenses that they coordinated, good pass-catching backs. Kevin Falk, Danny Woodhead, Shane Vereen, who of course became a Giant.
James White,
who certainly has been the best of my era. And they hadn't really found a replacement for James White in the last few years of trying to run that offense when he was hurt in 2021, or at least some variation of it, with Matt Patricia, Joe Judge, and then Bill O'Brien last year. And then this year, really, Alex Van Pelt and the offense of the Patriots ran. They didn't look to throw the ball a lot to their backs. There was some semblance of a screen game, and I think part of that, frankly, had to do with the offensive line and just their inability to get the timing down and to be able to execute in the screen game. But I think what we should see from Josh McDaniels is more involvement for a guy like Antonio Gibson to manipulate matchups where you can detach that back, move him out of the backfield, try to flex him out and get him on a linebacker, force defenses to dictate their coverage and maybe declare a mismatch for you to exploit. And I think that's something that was really a trademark of Josh's play calling in his last tenure during my stint calling the games, and I would expect it to be part of what the Patriots do in the future as well. Another part of the offense that we didn't see a lot of last year, or frankly in the last couple of years, as much as we had seen under Josh's direction, is motion.
I mean, you watch
games like San Francisco, the Rams with Sean McVay, and the Patriots of the past when you had Amendola and Edelman and those offenses where they really forced defenses to declare what their coverage was going to be.
Those types of trickery, the trickery.
Absolutely. So I think we're going to see that return. I would be very surprised if it doesn't. And I think that you're absolutely right when you talk about those running backs, but Gibson in particular, and I think creativity being part of the offense as well. And maybe it does involve some trick plays, or maybe it's just, you know, in more standard plays, disguising formations, disguising what you're doing, or creating mismatches so that you can exploit a weakness defensively.
I mean, I know a lot about bad offensive lines. I know exactly where you're coming from. I have another question regarding this receiver room, and that is, from what I know, I believe that during last year's draft, New England made a trade with the Los Angeles Chargers, in which New England ended up receiving Jalen Polk and Javon Baker with the pick that they traded to the Chargers, where they selected Ladd McConkey, of course, a contender for the rookie of the year on the offense. Do you think that trade will, per se, haunt New England, or do you think that Polk and Baker have an opportunity to make themselves known sometime in the future?
Well, I think it's already haunted them, having watched the Patriots and
Oh,
the
yeah.
Chargers play in week 17 and watch Ladd McConkey, run
Do
all
his
over
thing.
a couple of balls for more than 100 yards, including a touchdown reception against the Patriots. He was fantastic in that game. Jalen Polk is a real mystery because coming out of Washington, he was a high production receiver. I didn't read or hear a lot of negatives about Jalen Polk. Maybe some people question whether he had the speed to really separate in the NFL, but in terms of his makeup and approach to the game, he seemed to be a pretty rock solid player coming out of Washington. And perhaps as a second round pick was drafted a bit too high. Maybe the Patriots overdrafted him after they traded it back. And you mentioned the McConkey trade, and they used both of the picks that they got by trading out of that spot, 34, I believe it was, and two rookie receivers. Well, in the case of Polk, he came into the NFL again, I think, with a really solid reputation. Guy who was known as a worker, guy who was known as a tough player, a physical receiver with good hands. And we saw a lot of that during training camp, frankly, and a little bit during the preseason. And then very early in the year, it just seemed like he got off to the wrong foot, on the wrong foot. And with that bad start that he had, there were some drops. He was called out a little bit by head coach Jerod Mayo, and he questioned, he shot back at Mayo, and he was very active on social media early this season. And I just feel like he kind of got himself into a rut that he was never able to escape. And perhaps his confidence at that point was beyond repair. And it eventually led perhaps to just a lack of awareness on the field at times, not being able to get lined up, maybe not running the right route, being in the wrong place. Got a couple of touchdown passes, but I don't think those were, in any way indicative of potential down the road. So he's got a lot of work to do, I think, this offseason, first emotionally, psychologically, and then physically, to try to, get himself to a place where he can come into training camp next year, at least in the spring this year, learn the offense, and be able to win some matchups that he wasn't able to do last year. In the case of Javon Baker, he came into the league with some red flags, unlike Polk, a guy that was drafted in the fourth round and started at Alabama before transferring to Central Florida. He got off to, again, social media is a common denominator, it seems, a presence on social. We weren't used to that in New England, by the way, for a long time under Bill Belichick. And I think in Baker's case, again, maybe a little overactive, a little too much bravado off the field, got into some early trouble as well. He had an incident at the airport in Boston with some police. And, it just seemed like his case that he was always, anytime that he was in a position where he could get an opportunity to get on the field, he was always setting himself back. And by the end of the year, his production was minimal at best. And you look back on that trade, and certainly it is one that haunts the Patriots today. Can they salvage something out of the two rookie receivers? I believe so. I believe maybe Jalen Polk, especially, has a chance to turn things around next year and at least contribute to the offense. I don't think he's ever going to be the kind of guy that, we've already seen McConkey become be a real high production receiver for the New England Patriots. But, I still wouldn't be shocked if he becomes a guy who next year finds a way to catch 30, 40, maybe even 50 balls
Yeah.
in their offense. Again, if he can get himself right in the right frame of mind coming in, he'll get that opportunity with the new coaching staff.
Yeah, coming into the season, I saw Polk as like a fantasy sleeper. I took him, I think, in the 17th round in one of my drafts, hoping, with that obviously not so great receiver room, he would get some opportunities to compete with a DeMario Douglas or a Kendrick Bourne or those guys. But of course, that, didn't pan out. One of the stats that really sticks out to me with this whole McConkey trade thingy is that McConkey this year had 52 first downs caught compared to the two Patriots receivers who had a combined five, more than 10 times the first downs that the Patriots receivers had. Just a cool stat I found that I was like, wow, that is really ridiculous.
Yeah, you can find a lot of those stats, unfortunately, when you look at McConkey's numbers. I think in a single game against the Patriots, he exceeded the production of those two receivers when it came to receiving yards, for the entire season. So, there are a lot of different ways to measure it. In 2024, their rookie season, the Patriots came up well short of what McConkey was able to do. But, you know, it's also indicative of a problem that's existed in New England now under different regimes, different administrations, different people making those picks at wide receiver. They just haven't been able to hit on a homegrown drafted wide receiver in a long time. And they developed one in an undrafted player, Jacoby Myers. And Josh McDaniels deserves a lot of credit for his evolution as a Patriot. When you think about Jacoby in 2019, undrafted former quarterback early in his career at NC State, came into the NFL for the Patriots and kind of was that last guy on the roster as a wide receiver. A slot guy, but not necessarily as quick or as speedy as an Edelman and Amendola, guys who played that position in the past. Troy Brown for the Patriots, a little bit bigger than those guys. Solid kick, ball catcher, though. 2020, though, he's kind of one of the last guys on the roster to break training camp in the COVID year. Julian Edelman gets hurt early in the season, about six games in. By that point, Myers had already been inactive a couple of times. A couple of other times, didn't have any targets in games, I think. Well, he breaks out, replacing Edelman, relatively speaking. And then the next couple of years has a terrific run for the Patriots. And the Pats, you know, more or less elected not to keep him. He went to the Raiders in free agency. Patriots went out and signed Juju Smith-Schuster, and that turned out to be an ill-fated decision on their part. But before that, N'Keal Harry. After that, Tyquan Thornton. You can go down the list of guys. Aaron Dobson, Josh Boyce. Just in my tenure alone, going back to 2013, they've rarely hit on wide receivers drafted, even in the middle rounds, let alone the early rounds. Malcolm Mitchell's a player in 2016 was a nice pickup for them, drafted out of Georgia. Unfortunately, though, he hurt his knee and he had some recurring problems early in his career that he never recovered from.
Yeah, Jacoby Myers on the opposite side of Polk was a guy who helped me do solid in my fantasy league, actually on the same team, ironically. But I mean, yeah, that lack of success with drafting receivers is something that a lot of teams are all too familiar with. But with a team with as great of a history as the Patriots, that's not something the fans are willing to accept. They need to have someone that they can rely on at the receiver position. And this year, I know I had DeMario Douglas in my starting lineup when he went down sick on the first drive, but he's not a guy that you can really rely on as wide receiver one, especially when you have all this draft capital and just don't take advantage of it.
Yeah, you know, Jack, and I don't want to beat these guys up too much, but, you know.
No, yeah, I totally get you.
in Pop Douglas's case, I mean, this is a guy that has some ability in terms of quickness and the ability to uncover quickly.
He's very athletic.
Make some plays with the ball in his hands. But I think, you know, there were signs over the last couple of years that the kind of awareness that you need, spatial awareness. And again, you know, they've gone through this transition now for the second straight year offensively. For Pop Douglas, the previous year you had the turnover after Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, with Bill O'Brien taking back over the offense for New England, coming in under Bill Belichick, and then of course after Belichick moved on and O'Brien went to Boston College, you had the Gerard Mayo staff with Alex Van Pelt and a new receivers coach in Tyler Hughes. And so, and I'm going to be fair to Pop Douglas, and maybe things will change with McDaniels coming in as the OC and the rest of the offensive staff filling out. But you know, I think that there's the physical ability, but there's also just the kind of knowledge. I mentioned Jacoby Myers as a former quarterback to play that position. And I think really, especially if McDaniels incorporates the kind of offense he's run in the past with the Patriots, a lot really falls on that slot receiver in terms of thinking the same way that the quarterback thinks, seeing the defense the same way the quarterback sees it when it comes to option routes and the timing and the awareness that needs to go into every play. And so we're going to find out if Pop can adapt to that. I think that, you know, he is a guy with some ability. Again, physically, it might have been a reason why the Patriots were willing to look away from McConkey and make that deal, because they might have felt they were satisfied with what they had at slot receiver, but it just hasn't been consistently good enough. There have been some flashes here and there, but just not consistently good enough.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking a lot about this team that the Patriots have a lot of time to work on before training camp and the OC. How about we talk a little bit about Mike Vrabel? We don't have a lot of time left, but we need to touch on, the new head coach, of course, former coach of the year back in 2021 with Tennessee, led off his Tennessee tenure with four consecutive winning seasons before going to losing ones in 22 and 23, now heading over to New England. Do you think Vrabel can turn around from whatever that was last year?
Well, I think Mike Vrabel's the right guy for the job right now, this organization. I think they need to have a steadying force. He's someone who will come in and be demanding. I think that he knows the Patriots. Obviously, he's a big part of the franchise's success as a dynasty 20 years. Vrabel was a three-time Super Bowl champion, a versatile, resourceful, tough, smart player. The guy was an edge player, but also then when they needed him to play inside as a linebacker, could do that. He caught touchdown passes. And he was a very good route-running tight end who, only seemed to line up and catch touchdown passes.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever the ball was on his way, he was catching a touchdown.
12 catches, 12 touchdowns.
but you watch him, it's like you watch his route running and you watch the hands and the skills with the ball. He wasn't a gimmick type player. And of course, he was a very, very good special teams player. That's how he was able to really establish himself first in the league with Pittsburgh. And it helped him attract the attention of his eventual suitor in free agency, the Patriots. So he's got that background. He was eventually signed by the Pats, made a name for himself as a real leader on the Patriots, a guy who helped to keep the culture of those championship teams in the locker room, up to police the locker room. And then, of course, goes out of coaching career. What I like about Mike's coaching career is that he really was able to get outside from under Bill Belichick's umbrella and go out and coach with someone like Urban Meyer at the college level at his alma mater, Ohio State, and then join Bill O'Brien in Houston and to coach defense with Romeo Crennel and be exposed to some of the people there who weren't necessarily, only branches off the Belichick tree. O'Brien, of course, came from Belichick's staff, but he had also been elsewhere and coached in a number of other situations on the college level, at least. So I think in Vrabel's case, he goes to Houston, then takes over the team in Tennessee. He was able to go head-to-head with Bill Belichick, unfazed, like a lot of coaches might have been at that time. When you think about 2018, 2019, the Patriots still at the top of the league, and was able to outwit the Patriots in a couple of key spots, including one infamous scenario that we look back on in the 2019 wild card when it came to his command of the rules and his ability to foil his mentor, if you will, his former coach when Mike was a player for the Pats. But beyond that, I mean, his teams, I think, in his first few years at Tennessee, they played to their potential. They were tough. They were tough defensively. They were tough offensively. Good line play. They were disciplined. They didn't beat themselves. They went to the AFC Championship, of course, after beating the Patriots and ending Tom Brady's career as a Patriot in New England. And I just think about, the way that team played against the Patriots as well, regular season year before the Pats went on to win the Super Bowl in 2018. They were roughhouse. They were manhandled by the Titans down in Nashville, Tennessee. And that really stood out to me in terms of a team taking on the personality of its coach. And I think that's really where the Patriots need to begin now in this rebuild. You alluded to it earlier. This is not, I think, an immediate turnaround for this team. There are so many holes on the roster. But I think the thing about Vrabel coming in and with his knowledge of this organization, the trust factor between him and ownership, the credibility that he has in that locker room, in this community, for a team that has sucked so far so quickly, a guy like Mike Vrabel, I think, was exactly what they needed to come in and try to turn things around. And I also think he's somebody, because of experience at Cleveland, Jack, and I'm getting going on and on here, and I'll wrap it up with this thought. When he went to Cleveland last year, worked under Kevin Stefanski and spent a lot of time around Andrew Berry in the front office, was part of that Brown staff as a consultant. I think it really helped him evolve as a coach and maybe, become, someone who, with his staff, with his players, in this next iteration of Mike Vrabel's coaching career while with the Patriots, is able to take that leap from where he was, in years 3-4 with Tennessee before you get to 5-6, because those years were marred by a lot of friction in the front office. But he's able to take that leap from where he was, kind of in that portion of his career where the Titans reached a certain level and plateaued, and maybe eventually take that next step and become a championship caliber head coach with the Patriots down the road. But that's still a long way off, as I mentioned.
I have one huge idea about this new move, bringing Vrabel to New England. And that is during his tenure in Tennessee, he, of course, had the freak of nature himself, Derrick Henry. Coming to New England, do you think his experience with Derrick Henry will allow him to better utilize Ramondre and even Antonio Gibson in the run game?
Well, I think the one thing I will say about Mike Vrabel, I think when it comes to, Derrick Henry in Tennessee, that was the strength of their offense. And I think he was limited somewhat by his quarterbacks, first Marcus Mariota and eventually Ryan Tannehill. And the Titans got the most out of them with an efficient game, really built off of the success of Derrick Henry. So I think what Vrabel's expressed, and I would imagine here in New England, he'll be adaptable. And he's going to want an offense that's efficient, an offense that doesn't beat itself, an offense that, whatever the personnel dictates, that's how the offense will be orchestrated. And I think that, early on, Ramondre Stevenson figures to be a very pivotal figure for them. But at the same time, he can't drop the ball seven times as he did this past year. And I think with Vrabel, you won't expect any kind of a tolerance for that, and we should see a more consistent approach in terms of, handling someone who had the kind of fumbling issues that Ramondre Stevenson had this past season. And it can be done. As a Giants fan, you may recall Tiki Barber
Oh,
and
yeah.
the transformation that he made with Tom Coughlin, going from a fumble-plagued player to a guy who was at least able to become, not only a productive back who made some plays as a pass catcher, but more as a runner, but also as a guy that was reliable to hold on to the football. So it's been done. Kevin Falk did it here. Ramondre, has to turn that around for him from this season to next so that he can stay on the field and be that kind of guy as a bell cow. But I think that with McDaniels, you'll see a lot of versatility in the offense.
Love to hear that, especially for all my Patriots fan friends. All of us back from SBC have like a group chat. There's a ton of, Patriots guys in there. So they're going to be super hyped to hear all that directly from you. We have about 5 minutes left. So I have a couple little questions about your time in sports broadcasting. And my first of those two questions is, if you could pick one moment you've ever called to be your favorite, what would it be? You've called the Malcolm Butler interception. You've also called the biggest comeback in NFL history. If you could pick one, what would it be and why?
I'd say one of my favorites too is a triple overtime win for Navy over Notre Dame in 2007. The
Oh.
Naval Academy ended a 43-game series losing streak to Notre Dame in any one of the number of Army-Navy games. I called 16 of them. And I don't remember exactly how many Navy won during that period. I think they won 11 in a row, my last 11 that I called, any one of those games. But in terms of the Patriots experience, my favorite game to call was the Kansas City victory for the Patriots in the 2018 AFC Championship, decided in overtime, the game-winning touchdown run for Rex Burkhead. But I think of a single play, I would say James White's overtime touchdown against the Atlanta Falcons in Super Bowl 51, to cap the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history, and of course to complete the first overtime in Super Bowl history.
It's a good pick. I mean, that play, I watch back all the time. Just so important and so crucial to prove that this Patriots dynasty is the greatest ever. And I mean, James White's a guy who, doesn't really get the recognition from casual NFL fans as much as he should. He was a piece of the heart and soul of that late end of the Patriots dynasty. And that play, along with that whole game, is just permanently engraved in my head. It's an all-timer for sure.
It was a great one. We had so many fond memories, Jeff. We were spoiled, my partner Scott Zolak and I, when we started in 2013. I mentioned earlier, all the AFC Championship games and the Super Bowls that we got to call. To go to four Super Bowls in my first 6 years in the NFL, I didn't do anything to deserve that. I was just along for the ride. I'm so grateful that I was, but I definitely took it for granted. Now, having gone through the last few years for the Patriots, particularly these back-to-back 4-13 seasons, but that game against the Falcons, really a tremendous collection of memories, thinking back to that, the way the Patriots came back in that game. But I would go back to Super Bowl 49, and the Patriots went over the Seahawks, and at the time, the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. To me, that's the best Super Bowl that we have called. Two heavyweights really going at it, one team on the verge of becoming a dynasty, and the other, taking the next step in becoming a dynasty once again, if you will, in the case of the Patriots.
Rookie Malcolm Butler engraving his name in history forever on that play.
Yeah, and that might, that could very well be the best play that I've ever caught. There are a lot of times, honestly, Jack, in you may find this in your career, in play-by-play. A lot of times, for me, the most gratifying calls are not the famous ones, but they're calls that might have popped up in week six, in week 12, and nobody else is going to remember. But for you, for whatever reason, there's a special meaning. Maybe it was the circumstances of the call, or maybe it was something you said beforehand where you anticipated. And when that happens, to me, like, that's when it clicks in your mind. You think that was a great call, or that's a play that I'm never going to forget. Nobody else will. Nobody else will remember it but you.
Got about 1 minute left. My final question for you. If you could give one piece of advice to an upcoming sports broadcaster like myself and all those guys in my SBC group chat, what would it be?
I'm going to repeat words that someone gave me a long time ago, and I was asking him the same question, someone who's had a long and very successful career. Be your own harshest critic, but also be your own biggest booster. And I really believe it's important to concentrate on the craft. I just try to continue to be the best broadcaster you can be. Seek out the advice, the candid feedback of people you respect and admire in the business, and do it because you want to be better. You want self-improvement. And if you do that, you'll eventually get where you want to go in this business. I've been able to reach the NFL and be here for the last 12 years. And I always say, if I can do it, and this is not lip service, then anybody can do it. Or at least anybody who has that gift, that passion for broadcasting, and someone like yourself can do it.
Love that. All righty. That has been episode 29 here from the Playoff Push Podcast. Again, thank you so much, Mr. Sosie, for coming on this show. It really means the world. And that's going to be it here from the Playoff Push Podcast. I hope you all have a great night. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.